Moolala is brought to you by the nonprofit credit counseling agency, Credit Canada. I love talking about behavioral science when it comes to your money. It is just such fascinating stuff. So helpful to see how our brains work and work well, and also sometimes how they work to our detriment. Now, there is a whole group of people who engage with clients on the topic of money every single day. They're financial advisors. And so there's a real match to enabling those financial advisors to understand the way our brains work such that they can help their clients do more good stuff when it comes to their money. Today, we're going to talk about a new course that was developed for the financial advisors. Our guest is Michelle Hilscher. She is VP Strategy and a behavioral scientist at BE Works. Hello there.
Hello. So happy to be here and talk about how we think.
So you've been on this show before. We've talked about some of the principles of behavioral science and the surprising conclusions and insights from the data. Why did you decide to create this course targeted at advisors?
Absolutely. So we wanted to get really practical and really into the day-to-day moments where people are on the cusp of making decisions, right? And so we knew that advisors have this opportunity to actually influence the behaviors of their clients, and that what they were missing perhaps was an understanding of what drives decision making and behaviors.
And what are some examples of the things that you cover in the course and that you would love for financial advisors to become more masterful at?
Absolutely. So the course is structured as 6 modules. And what we do is we start off by talking about that question of how do people navigate money decisions? And then we go into really great detail about how people think about time, because so much of it's about, you know, stretching your time horizon. How do you help people to do that? How do you help your clients navigate risk? In particular, we're imagining those moments when the market is volatile and, you know, investors are going to behave a way that maybe they don't want to.
Sell everything right now.
Absolutely. That's exactly the emotion and the hot state we want advisors to be able to address before it happens. So those are some of the main themes, but more importantly, I think it's really giving advisors access to a toolkit so that in the moment when you're having these conversations or sending those emails, you know, that's when they're actually starting to use these insights about human psychology to help their clients.
I was having a conversation with some very senior leaders in a high net worth firm last week, and there was this kind of belief that because they were operating at the highest levels of the asset under management world, that some of these rules didn't apply because the people are so smart and they're so driven and they're so accomplished, and that we don't want to talk down to them by, you know, talking about our silly little brains and the sort of things that people who don't have enough money, the mistakes that they would make. I bet you would argue that behavioral science applies to all humans, regardless of whether they earn $10,000 a year or $10 million a year. Please tell me that I am right.
You are right. And I can elaborate on how I know that you are. So for one thing, definitely we all use shortcuts when we make decisions, and it doesn't matter what the consequences might be of a poor decision, you know, whether it's the wrong coffee size we buy in the morning or the investment risk we choose to take on. So universal across people, and you'll see these biases in investors, but also in advisors themselves. The other thing that's interesting is there's research on ultra high net worth clients, just like you've mentioned, that shows that maybe they are ones who are a little bit more isolated in some ways and not as comfortable having money conversations. So that means that they're a little bit alone on an island, right? Dealing with these biases or maybe not being even aware that they exist.
Module 5 is about advice specifically.
Yes.
And you look at the reality that you can provide someone with advice. They may or may not follow through on that advice. What's the takeaway for the advisor community on how to, I mean, if it were me, I would just yell at people and force them to bend to my will. But I guess advisors can't really do that.
Oh, we're trying to move away from being paternalistic.
All right, fine. All right, fine.
So I would say it's about trying to get people to buy into decision processes, buy into the decisions that they make, and set up some type of guardrails for themselves in the future so that they are looking after themselves when they're in that hot state, knowing that it's going to happen and that it's going to be really difficult in the moment to stick with the intentions that they have. Mm-hmm. So those would be some of the sort of big takeaways, I suppose. And then the course itself provides really tactical examples of how you might do something like that. Mm-hmm. Sorts of conversations.
Can you give me an example? Can you give me an example of a tactical?
Can. Yeah. So I think another, like a good example of this would be related to that hot state decision-making that takes place, right? And you can plan ahead for sure. But then when the market drops, all of a sudden, do it again for us, Bruce, that noise, that sound, that reaction. We know, right? People are going to have that knee-jerk, emotionally driven desire to sell. And yeah. So, you know, part of this is about pre-committing. Like there's a plan, there's a set of actions that I am going to take that maybe are not reacting in that way, but instead taking advantage of the fact that it's low and maybe I'm going to buy something else with the support of my advisor. So those would be some examples, I think, that could be helpful.
There is a module around risk. And I think at base, financial advisors talk about risk tolerance. Like, yes. You know, would you be able to sleep if the market dropped 10%?
Yes.
No, I wouldn't be able to sleep. Therefore, you shouldn't be in that particular investment. What that doesn't account for is the risk, the longevity risk of investing in a particular investment vehicle that will give you a 2% return, yes, versus 5 or 6% return. The much more dramatic risk, not about how you feel in a market downturn, but about the reality that you haven't saved sufficient funds. How do you talk about that? Because I think that is quite different for how a lot of advisors have been trained to talk about it.
Yes, exactly. And I think it's a very difficult conversation to have because people have such a difficulty time traveling and imagining what's going to happen in the future, have convinced themselves that they're going to be maybe happy with less and maybe willing to compromise on things in the future that they certainly will not compromise on right now. So I think that there's definitely research on the future self. You're probably aware of it. That could lead to different experiences, maybe during onboarding or maybe as a way of kind of recalibrating clients across time. For example, having them write a letter to their future self and really, you know, connect with that person. So I think that's definitely part of it. And then also understanding that it's all about risk composure, right? So you can ask people in many different ways how comfortable they will be with risk in the future. But if you could actually connect it to the behaviors that they demonstrate when there are changes that happen, you actually go through that experience of time travel and see what happens. It's a nice way of connecting back to that original prediction people made. Because we know that it's very hard to know how you'll feel in the future and what you'll do. So it's better to use behavior as your guide.
Yeah. I had dinner last week with a 23-year-old. She's a delight. Super smart. Amazing, amazing, amazing. And we engaged as friends. There's no familial relationship. It's not my child or anything. And I was reflecting on how completely different a human I am today than I was at 23. That's 30 years ago. In 30 years, I predict that I will be a completely different person than I am today. But who knows how? It's a very difficult, I can envision what I will look like, physically still handsome, just with less hair, but how I will feel and think and what my values will be, I don't know.
Yes. Yes. And I think that you're right on the mark there. I think that part of the challenge here is helping clients or investors understand that they need to change over time to match up with the fact that their needs will change. I know that oftentimes people just buy into, you know, the solution, the strategy, the decision that they have made, and they are content with it. They don't want to change it. It's a status quo bias. It's also this satisficing, right? Like, I put time and effort in, so I don't really want to have to reevaluate this in a year's time. But I think it's very important for financial advisors to set up the expectation that this is a journey and that you really do need to come back and reevaluate decisions as your life changes, and that there could be more than one, you know, option for you. It's maybe just that you start here and you're kind of graduating, if you will, to something else over time.
Any advice, pun intended, on how an advisor could integrate this thinking in their client relationship in a way that builds trust rather than is confrontational? Because what I know a yeah, but is for some advisors is, whoa, I don't want to go there because I can see with my eyes the biases that are impeding my client from doing what's right for them, but I'm earning a 1% fee on a $5 million AUM or like a portfolio. I don't want to say anything that's going to rock the boat, even if it is in their best interest.
Yes. Well, that's where I think it's partly helpful to have more than one channel with which to communicate with your client. So for example, one of the big issues is that often we're very overconfident. We think we know a lot, and an advisor might feel a bit uncomfortable, as you say, you know, kind of letting on that they see some gaps. They see some areas that need attention. So that's where it's possible that advisors could create an experience that a client goes through on their own, and they're able to discover for themselves that there are some places where don't know as much as what they think they do. It's a bit of an anonymous experience. They're not, you know, showing that they don't understand things to the advisor, come to that realization on their own, and then are in a better position to actually ask for help, or, you know, some guidance perhaps. It's kind of that, you know, that example of draw a bicycle and explain the underlying mechanics. And you might describe yourself as someone who definitely understands bikes, is like a big cycling person. But when you go through that process, you see the illusion that you have that you've got explanatory depth on this issue. So I think, you know, something like that perhaps would help to reveal to the client where the value of the advisor actually comes in.
That's great. Where can people find out more about the course?
Oh, the course is available on the Canadian Securities Institute website. So you can actually go on there and check out the different modules, and you can actually sign up right online if you like. It's a self-paced course, so you don't have to do it all in one weekend. You can take a bit of time if you like. Yeah.
Breathe and practice. Michelle, thank you so much for this.
Oh, my pleasure. Always nice to speak with you.
Michelle Hilscher, VP Strategy and a behavioral scientist at BE Works. And she joined us to talk about a course that they have created that focuses on financial advisors and endeavors to give them some of the tools and contexts of behavioral finance.